Thank you, Fred. The Lou Cannon line, which I've committed to memory, is actually, he's getting a fairer press than he deserves. Which reminds me of the Irish politician Sir Boyle Roche, who once roared in anguished outrage, "Half the lies our enemies tell about us aren't true." By the way, this phrase, the adversary press, always puzzled me. I don't remember the press being adversarial toward the great society. I've never noticed it being adversarial toward the activist judiciary. I've never noticed it being adversarial toward the new bureaucracies that have sprung up in Washington. I notice it being adversarial toward any conservative elements it finds in Washington. In that sense, it's adversarial. I think this is another euphemism for liberal, which is, of course, a euphemism for you-know-what. In this era of gigantic government, we do need an adversary press. We just haven't got one, really. But you're about to meet a true adversary journalist. Tom Bethel was born in England in the late Middle Ages, attended Oxford University on a full basketball scholarship, after a game-fixing scandal, he was forced to come to this country where he's lived prosperously since 1962. He's written for a number of magazines ranging from Harper's to the American Spectator and National Review. He's best known, perhaps, as co-author of the forthcoming book, The Hive. I'm not at liberty to disclose that. Ladies and gentlemen, Tom Bethel.
Thank you very much. Joe, I'm afraid you've so much influenced the way I think of various things that you actually stole my opening lines here, because I had written down, and I wanted to correct, and I will repeat it because I think it is important to stress that I want to amend what Irving Kristol said last night and what Fred Barnes has said about our having an adversarial press. We really do not have an adversarial press. The ones I had written down were, you don't see any adversary attitude towards taxes. You don't see any adversarial attitude towards Social Security, towards the bureaucracy generally, towards EPA, towards OSHA. You do, however, see an adversary attitude towards the political appointees at the top of these agencies, and you will tend to see that whether you have a Democratic or a Republican administration, but particularly Republican. The press does not adopt an adversary attitude towards welfare programs. The press does not adopt an adversary attitude towards the IMF. Does not adopt an adversary attitude towards Fidel Castro, towards the Sandinistas, towards the Soviet Union, towards Andropov, the Soviet leader, on whose behalf they make endless excuses and never make on behalf of Reagan. We know what the press said about what the press said and thought about the Grenadian liberation. Less well known is what the Washington Post said about Reagan's trip to South Korea immediately thereafter. He bungled it. Why? Because he, quote, failed to press the human rights issue. South Korea now has a, quote, military leadership that rules with an unnecessarily harsh hand, close quotes. Ronald Reagan did not simply stay mute on this. He actually praised the government. Now, the truth is that the Seven Sisters, the news media, is not adversarial, it's anti-American. This phrase was used actually in the Washington Post, shortly after the Grenadian invasion, not in connection with the press, but in connection with several congressmen, by Mark Shields, whom I agree with your evaluation of, that he's sort of poses as a liberal. He's a good fellow. But what I mean by anti-American, I think, it's important to try and get clear what we're talking about. It's not that they would really like to see, the press would like to see the hammer and sickle flying over the White House. They're not unpatriotic in that sense, but they do see America as this great obstacle to the successful achievement of this worldwide change in the way that society and life is organized along progressive lines, which is, we can use the word socialism to describe. They see America as being the obstacle to this. If it wasn't for the United States, this would have been successfully and non-coercively achieved in the Soviet Union, in Cuba, in Nicaragua, right now. This is the ideology that essentially animates the press. And I think that what happened in the wake of the Grenadian invasion was that there was an increasing perception among the American people that the press was, there was in fact a serious problem. We do have a serious problem on our hands with the press now. And so I think that there is an increasing opposition, perhaps, to the press. I gather that there has been, that the Washington Post received quite a bit of mail after the Grenadian invasion opposing the kind of positions they took, although ultimately they did come round to a much more reasonable position editorially. The Post is far more sensible editorially than the New York Times, which ran ferociously anti-American editorials consistently after the Grenadian affair. And I gather also CBS News has had quite a bit of hostile mail. Now, I think that some conservatives might feel somewhat jubilant and pleased about this development. They feel that here is an opportunity at last to sort of muzzle the press. And there has been suggestion along those lines in some of the comments we've heard earlier today about various ways in which the press can be brought under greater control. I would just suggest that we should be very cautious about this, because I think that we may, because of the increased unpopularity of the press in America, be facing a time of increased calls for press control, which is not something that conservatives should be in favor of. There is a proposal in Congress, or there's been some discussion in Congress, to do away with the Fairness Doctrine, for example, and this has been opposed by, which I think certainly should be done away with. I think that we would be better off without it. But this has been opposed by various well-known new right figures who feel that this is not the only way they can get to say certain things in the press, on the television and radio. And the point that I would also particularly like to stress is that on the liberal left, there is no great enthusiasm for an unregulated press today. This is masked, this is disguised by the fact that current attacks on the press coming from the right, accuracy in media and so on, are defended against and warded off, as it were, opposed by arguments that are libertarian in outline, but in practice are defenses of the fact that the liberals currently control the content of the news media, and they see this as an attempt to take away this degree of control that they already have. So they say, what they say is, we're in favor of freedom of the press, therefore you shouldn't be criticizing us. But really what they're guarding is their successful control of the turf, the actual content of what is in the press. If there were developments whereby the media began to lose this control, feel that they had lost this control or were losing it, they would not hesitate to appeal to the government for various kinds of intervention in order to maintain their position. This is why we have to be so careful about calling for or being on the side of any kind of press control, because you're likely to suddenly to find yourself in bed with the wrong kind of people, just to the point where we could win it just on the pure force of ideas. Now, here are some examples of the kinds of ways in which the liberal left at the present is not particularly interested in freedom of the press. One journal that is worth reading is the Columbia Journalism Review, which has become a left-wing organ. There's just no other word for it. It has become gone amazingly far to the left. And the interesting thing, one of the things about this is that it's the case, you know, the dog that didn't bark. There's been no comment on this in the press at all. You'd have thought that there would be some kind of alert article that might have been written in the New York Times or something, but there's been nothing to that effect, which indicates a tacit approval. The executive editor of Columbia Journalism Review contrived to apologize for the censorship of La Prensa in Nicaragua. Columbia Journalism Review has not come down against the New World Information Order, of the UNESCO's New World Information Order, which is an attempt to essentially to put the control of contents of the news media in various third world countries into government hands. Columbia Journalism Review has not said anything on behalf of the Dartmouth Review, which has been frivolously sued. And although normally Columbia Journalism Review will come out strongly in favor of press when it's sued. There is, in fact, then a general consistent pattern of omission here. There is something called Interpress Service, which is a UN-funded news service, which runs the kind of news items that the New World Information Order would give us, which is now that these stories, some of their stories are carried by Christian Science Monitor and so on, as though they were just the AP or UPI stories. And again, the Columbia Journalism Review has written that the right wing is screaming about this, although in fact I don't think there has been any screaming. The Annenberg's Journal of Communications of the Annenberg School has published a symposium which was tended to be more pro-New World Information Order than not. And then we have something called the Media Access Project, a Naderite group, which is now promoting notions of access and right to publish, which are ideas which essentially will tend to transfer greater power to the government, because the idea that the people have unequal power and therefore we all have some equal right to publish, this inevitably results in the creation of some government agency which decides who publishes what. And an example, also an interesting case that I recently experienced, in fact just a week ago, I had to speak at a conference of pollsters and news media, in which there were many of the most prestigious pollsters and the news this was in the Washington Post building, and the people who write the stories around these polls. It's very interesting to note that the polling establishment right now and the people at the Washington Post and the New York Times who write these stories around these polls are absolutely incensed about ABC News. Not because of the film they're showing on Sunday, but because of the use of phone-in polls. Now, phone-in polls, the beauty of the phone-in poll is that the way they have got the normal polls is that they essentially are able to frame the question in such a way as to get the answers to come out the way they want it. In other words, the normal kind of Harris poll will prove to you that the American people is in favor of higher taxes, and it's just absolutely, completely consistent with the liberal agenda in every single point. And with these phone-in polls, they don't quite control, it's sort of slipped out of their control, and the answers don't come in the way they want it. For example, there was a phone-in poll that they did a couple of months ago on ABC. Do you think the UN should remain in the United States after the Liechtenstein business? And the phone-in poll said 67% phoned in and said no. 33% said yes. The ABC at the same time conducted one of its, quote, scientific polls, and the result was 72% said yes, they should stay in the U.S., and 28% said no. They were controlling it with the scientific poll, and they couldn't control it with a phone-in poll. Now, the media has become these people, and I will mention Adam Clymer of the New York Times, who was at this conference, have become quite upset about this. And if you, ostensibly what they're concerned about is science. These polls are not scientific, so they have become the custodians of the protocols of science, as it were. They've become immensely concerned about this. Well, you know that's not what they're really concerned about. Anyway, Clymer got up, made a speech, and he said, you know what, to these pollsters who are all sitting there, you know what you could do, what you guys should do? We've got to stop this. Sue ABC to get equal time under the fairness doctrine to respond to these polls. Now, this shows, it seems to me, a certain lack of enthusiasm for freedom of the press. So I suggest that, again, we should be careful here. I would also mention this, the point that Joe raised about peer pressure. This is a system whereby a kind of conformity of thought is introduced into the news media, which is very much more powerful than government regulation, because unwritten rules, the rules of etiquette, are much stronger, in a sense, than a written or legal code. And they don't have to be explained, in some sense. And I think that the whole, that the Seven Sisters, the elite news press and so on right now, is very strongly influenced by this. In fact, I would be interesting to hear from Fred. He must have felt this pressure. I don't know. But anyway, perhaps you could say something about that later. I would just cite, for example, one or two cases of this. I've seen stories. I remember seeing a story once in the Washington Post that just absolutely astounded me, disclosing it was written about an assistant secretary of the defense called Richard Perle, who's on America's side, and it pointed out, it just simply exposed him as a source of some of these stories that were coming out that were undermining the proposed SALT treaty. Evans and Novak have been written about them, just simply naming their sources at various times because the rest of the press didn't like what they were saying. They're quite ruthless. Bob Bartley has been attacked in the press because he doesn't fit in, although the New Wall Street Journal is obviously influential, and Alex Coben has written articles attacking anybody really who falls out of line. I mean, but in particular, John Vinnicker. Coben is. I think we should restore the word communistic. I mean, it's very interesting that the dictates of etiquette have actually ruled out the use of this word, which is so useful, because there are a lot of people who are not, and in fact there are very few people who are card-carrying communists, but they are in fact sympathetic to this whole communist, to the whole system, the whole progressive, the world progressive order that's sort of basically in some sense structured around the Soviet Union. And right, Marx used the word communistic, but now we're just not allowed to use it. So I think that I'm going to campaign on... It became ridiculed at a certain point in the 1950s and 60s, I think, as implying a conspiratorial view of the world. And Fred mentioned the notion of conspiracy. I'm not suggesting that the news media, that there is any kind of a conspiracy here. It's very important to get this straight. There is a consistent pattern of discrimination on behalf of the socialist ideology, but this does not imply a conspiracy. You can get patterns. Patterns can emerge without the people who participate in this pattern meeting beforehand and agreeing that they're going to behave in a consistent, patterned way. Ducks fly south for the winter, but they don't have to meet in Greenland before and all decide in conspiratorial pattern where they're going to go. And the problem was, you see, that the old right, you might say, back in the 1950s, discerned, correctly discerned this pattern. And they immediately provided a conspiratorial explanation for it, and that was incorrect. Therefore, the liberals were in the powerful position at that point of being able to deny the, in denying the existence of the conspiracy, also were able to ridicule the idea that there was even a pattern. So what we need is some new type of explanation that explains what is going on, that restores the whole notion of this pattern to the discussion, but does so without recourse to any kind of a conspiratorial type of explanation. And this is where Joe's brilliant metaphor of the beehive, where behavior is instinctive, and as a result of communication, which is now right out in the open, is comes in, I think. So maybe one day we'll write the book. Thanks very much. Thank you, Tom.